When they called me to do the documentary, I was like, no, I'm not doing it. And who's the first person? Like, oh, I'll be there. I'm going to get some face filler and fucking come here and talk shit about the person who supported me.
Hello, it's Chris.
Hey, everybody. What is up? And welcome to this week's episode of Chris vs. the People. I'm your host, Chris Clemens, and once again, y'all are the people. We have a very exciting guest here today that I think if you told me that she was going to be on my podcast when I was younger, I would have shit the bed. Mm. And we have Kelly Catrone here
Hi,
today.
Everybody. What's up?
Like, I found out about you, I think, the same way a lot of people did, which is reality television.
Okay.
I found out about you on The Hills.
All right.
And well, then let's go. I was immediately hooked because I had never encountered somebody like you, because I'm from
what does that mean?
I'm from Delaware. I know that you're probably like, that was so backhanded.
No, it doesn't matter. Okay, but like, good. What does that come off like?
It was just what I saw was a very powerful woman who knew exactly what she wanted, knew exactly what she wanted to say. Like, just you were like really one of the first people that I remember witnessing.
You know, thinking, don't you think it's crazy that people never see that on television? Like, it's so, the feminine is so dumbed down, right?
Yeah.
It's super dumbed down. And that's why the thing that was shocking to me was just like if I were a Super Bowl coach, right, they'd be like, oh my God, she's been in 100 Super Bowls. Like, she's been down to 50 Super Bowls. Like, she's amazing and she runs a tight ship, blah, blah, blah. And you're a woman and you do it. And people were in shock. They were like, oh my God, she's a witch, she's a bitch, whatever. It's like, you don't even know me. Like, I literally am loading in 800 people who all think they're the most important people in the world. I've spent sleepless nights assigning seat assignments, giving QR codes, and people still don't know what their seat is. Like, I don't know what to say. And then everybody's seat crashing, all this other stuff. Of course, it's like a group sport at that point.
Yeah. Well, so how do you define what, because I think you would say you're a fashion publicist. But, like, to me, you are a lot more than that. Like, how do you define your role?
I mean, I think that my world is pop culture and media. Okay. And I play different roles in that. So, yes, I love doing PR. And for me, like, the media is the mothership. It's my distribution network. You know, so when I have thoughts or stories or brands or things, I have a grid, like a matrix, and I can activate that to get the results. But over the years, of which there have been many, we started creating a lot of the genetics that create the conversation. So instead of in most PR, like if you work for Dior, they go, bonjour, you know, the inspiration is, you know, Paris 1948 mixed with Dance Sound Factory 1988. And they give you like the communications packet, the assets file, the campaigns, like who's in them, what models, where it's going, what packages are going in the windows or on the website, and how the launches are going to go. You get a work back doc. It's all in sync. That's already done.
Gotcha.
But a lot of people, they have this dream for their brand or whatever it is, their project. And they're like, yeah, we want to be in Vogue. Or, yeah, I'm like, great. Show me where you have Vogue material.
How many times have you heard I want to be in Vogue?
Like a lot. But it's like, it's not a problem, because if you have product that should be in Vogue, and you have a good publicist, it might not happen the first month, but when you're strategic, it will come, and you have to pay your dues and go through that. So, but it's like, if you don't have the product, like I am a magician.
Yeah.
I am a magician, but we can crunch that timeline for you, but like, you still have to be competitive.
Yeah.
It's like applying to college, you know, you want to go to Harvard with a 900 SAT score. Like, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's probably not going to happen.
But I think that is like part of the magneticism or whatever the word that I could try and spend time thinking of. But like, yeah, you were very articulate and like, yeah, you knew what was up, and if you had to cry, go the fuck outside. Like,
I like to say that I started as a really skinny blonde girl with three names. Now that happened.
What were your three names? Michaeli, Lynn.
Yeah, like Amber, Elizabeth, you know, Dawson or something like.
But you know. Yeah, you just, you were always like someone that was so inspiring to me.
Oh, thanks, just Chris. That's sweet.
Because you're a badass. I know you're told that probably a million times. And like, there's nothing I'm saying that's going to be new. But just, yeah, living in a small state where it's like everybody works at JP Morgan or like...
That's not bad.
No, I mean, trust me, my brothers work there.
You live in a rich neighborhood?
No.
You don't?
No.
You're from Delaware, right?
Yeah. Joe Biden land.
I know. I've been to Delaware.
You have?
Yeah. I went with Anna Delvey.
Stop.
We ended up in a tiki sand beach restaurant in Delaware because my mom lives in Virginia. And in order to drive from New York City, you have to go by the Delaware Water Gap.
Of course.
And we were getting hungry on our way home after being in Williamsburg. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was on the way there or back, but we also cruised through Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And
what a wild place.
Anna, who's very quick on the internet, as you might imagine, she was like, Kelly, let's find a cool place to go. I'm like, okay, you're in charge. And we end up in the most, I probably have photos on my phone from it. We ended up in like a tiki sandbar in Delaware.
Do you know what town?
Nope.
Damn.
I mean, I can look it up and see if the photos come up on my photos.
How did you get started in like reality TV? Because you were established before.
Quite well before I decided to take the leap.
Were you just like not bored, but
no,
like were you wanting to
happened.
Try something?
No, I didn't. I had no idea what was going on. I'll tell you in a second. Delaware Valley. This is in the Delaware. This is me. Strangest creature, and I don't know, you can't see anything on my phone, but this is me at some antique store.
Is that on this trip?
I don't know where this is. This was in Delaware.
Because there's like a Delaware
really
county.
Funny. Have your Woody waxed. Some sign at an antique store. Oh, boy changed to girl. Here's like a little circus trans poster that was, I guess, happening from the 1930s.
Oh my God, I just saw someone on TikTok who like bought
this.
These,
is
like,
pretty cool, right?
That is pretty cool, honestly.
Yeah, it was a sideshow circus
you
banner.
You know a Republican somewhere had a heart attack at that?
I mean, they were probably bringing their kids there. They were the craziest ones.
100%.
I notice that anytime anybody says anything really mean to me on the internet, they have like
God in their bio.
Yeah, Psalm 3:18, you know, and it's just like that's the first thing that I like write to them if I feel like taking
I
a
saw you
them.
Just post about that. You were like, by the way, I love your Bible quote.
Yeah. I also called the HR person for her company.
And see, this is why I was just
I mean,
like,
you don't know me, you're going to come up to you're going to like send me these text messages that I'm a cunt. And all of this shit, and I should shut the fuck up, and what the fuck? And it's like, bitch, you're gonna fucking come into it. And you know what? Normally, it doesn't even bother me, but every once in
principle.
A while, I'm like, we need an example for the
shame.
Other people that are like this. So
we need
just
shame.
Know when you come to our house, we're locked and fucking loaded, okay? So you just never know, because you walked into the crocodile's den, and you know what? The crocodile is hungry. And so now, because there's this rule that if you're well-known, that people can just say whatever the fuck they want to
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And that you're not going to respond because you're above that. But it's not being above it. Sometimes it's like, yo, you come in and you fucking pick a fight, like, let's go. If I'm in the mood, I like to say, wrong bitch, wrong day. Do you say that?
Oh my God, I literally...
You're a Scorpio though, right?
Yes.
See, this is a Scorpio
When's
thing.
Your birthday?
13.
The 5th.
Okay.
I mean, the amount of times I say wrong bitch, wrong day is... I feel like I'm on my path right now. I'm like...
It's true though, right?
It is though.
I don't know why you're supposed to, when an attacker comes toward you, like, take it like Gandhi.
Take a high road.
I mean, Gandhi was good at it by, you know, but he also just sat there like he had a wisdom... So I'm just like, if I feel like it, I will. Ava Catrone, by the way, my daughter.
Okay. So
go ahead. But
she's
24 years old now.
That is horrifying.
That's crazy.
That's
just
insane.
To make you feel older.
Thank you.
You're
I was
welcome.
Hoping.
Let's see what cards we have.
I remember obviously knowing of you, and then like when social media came about or whatever, I like followed you there, and then like one of the suggested was Ava, and I remember. Seeing her on some show, maybe Kel
on
Earth.
She was on Kel on Earth.
Okay, that's what it was. I remember seeing her, and it said follow back, and I remember that being the weirdest.
She's a big fan of yours.
That was, to me, the one of like the most memorable, weirdest things of like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Do you mean, how did you hear about me?
She told me, like, oh my God, mommy, Chris Clemens is so cool. Like, you have to fuck with Chris Clemens. Like, I don't know if she said fuck with, but she's like, he's really important. He's really funny. And then, like, anything that she'll do. So I have this thing because I'm on the phone all day for my job.
Yeah.
And then when people put, like, TikTok videos and shit in my face, I get really triggered. Like,
yeah.
Like, just
overwhelmed.
Just really like, don't show that to me, like in my face, like I'll hold the phone myself, like Kelly Control. And she's like, no, you have to sit down and watch all these videos. And we did. And you were such a breath of fresh air and so funny and so talented. I was like, okay, we're gonna grab Chris Clemens. Wait, do we have the same hand tattoos?
Oh, the lions?
Yeah,
we've talked about
this. That's right. I forgot.
Do you remember that dinner we got on the Lower East Side?
Yes.
So Kelly and I got dinner this one night, and I think this was our first time, like, one-on-one, because, like, I had met you...
Wait, were we at Epistrophe on Mott Street?
I think so. Do you know the whole restaurant?
Yeah, I know the whole restaurant.
You walk... I get there, and you walk in. I'm sitting at the table. I'm like, oh, my God. Like,
that's not the Lower East Side. That's no Lita, but okay. Close.
To me, it's like...
It's like East Williamsburg.
Yeah, I'm like, it's Manhattan, Lower East, like that side. I'm sitting there. I'm like kind of nervous because I'm just like, you are you. So like little me, I'm just like, oh my God. Like we're having a one-on-one dinner and you walk in on the way to the table. You talk with and like high five every single employee of this restaurant.
I love those kids.
It doesn't matter. The host, the bussers, the cooks, and you are handing them all a gummy.
Okay. All right. We're going to go there. Okay. Let's go there. I'll tell you why. Let's talk about what am I doing with gummies? Let's start that conversation.
Listen, that's your business.
Yes. Okay. I did hand them gummies. I should have handed myself one before I came on the show, which I did not. And I also, to be clear, think that weed is a great drug. It's not for me at work.
Got it.
Because it makes me very nice. So as you could tell, I walked in and I was friendly to everybody.
Yeah.
That's weed. That is not the right tone for when you're like running $1 million budget for
100%,
an event. Like 100%. You just can't be like, oh, sounds good. Like, hey, you're robbing me, dude. Like if I'm on weed, it's like, you're never stressed. Like, you need a certain level of tension in my job, like when we're in production,
well,
which I am
like,
right
of
now.
Like clearness of like...
Yeah, you can't be high.
Yeah.
And like I personally, it's like drinking wine and going for a jog. Like why the fuck would you do that? Like just go for the jog.
I saw
like,
someone who did a marathon and had 260 milligrams of gummies before it.
Are you serious?
Marathon.
Okay, so anyway, let's get back to
Sorry,
this.
Sorry, yeah.
So what happened was, at that time, I was living with a Rasta. He says to me, oh, yeah, man, you're so good at making brands. We should do a cannabis brand. And I'm like, okay, let's do a cannabis brand. And this is right around the time when weed was becoming legal.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quite legal yet. And so I knew this casting agent whose mom... makes gummies in Tennessee. And he was like, and she's like a real normal, her real name's not Barbara because I'm not going to say her real name or the name of the casting agent, but she was like basically like in her late 60s and she'd be like, hello, this is Barbara. How can I help? And I like, Barbara, it's Kelly Catrone. Like, we're trying to get some gummies made. Do you think you could hook us up?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh yes, we use only the best natural ingredients. I make them here in my kitchen. And so what happened was, is at the time I met you, we were in the sampling business of trying out all these different flavors and milligrams of gummies.
Well, that's what you told me.
Okay, so now you know. And
I wasn't setting it up that like running these streets. I mean, you run the streets in a different way.
No, I was giving this away. I wasn't selling it.
Yeah.
It was, you can give it away. So this is an Italian restaurant called Epistrophe. It's Sardinian. I really love the people that own it. And I'm like, I want to give them my money. They're a local family, blah, blah, blah. Well, all the cooks there and the chefs, they're all like weed dudes, you know? Anyway, so when they would see that I'd come in with a Rasta, they started saying to me like, yo, do you have any weed? And I was like, this is a marketing opportunity. And I was like, well, we have these edibles that we've been trying. And I would like, we have like sour soft one. We have like these different ones. Would you like to try some? I have different milligrams. And we also make our own drinks because the Rastas make this...
Like weed beverages?
Weed beverages, but it's really beautiful. It's like with coconut milk and cardamom and ganja.
Oh, it's like
yeah, it's
real
an elixir.
Nice.
That's what we call it, an elixir. And so I was like, I also have these elixirs. Hey, do you want to just take them? Just write down how many milligrams you take, how you felt. Here's our indica. Here's the hybrid. Here's the sativa. And just keep a notebook.
You're really running a focus group.
Yeah. And you know what? They love me. And like,
listen,
and
it's mutually beneficial.
I probably had 2,000 squares of 10 milligram. What am I going to do with that? I mean, it would be like, I don't have that kind of a weed habit. Like, I was always walking around asking people. There's a skate shop around the street called Defeated, you know?
I'm sure they love you.
All those boys, like, they'd see me walk by with a Rasta. They'd be like, yo, the Rasta, hook him up, give him a spliff. We'd be like, hey, we're working on this weed brand. I was studying it up.
This is the greatest way to test product. It's efficient.
It's real. Well, that's also moms. Like, two of my best friends, they took it and they both face planted. Like, and then I realized my tolerance was probably getting really high because what happened to them, they were visiting the country house and I was like, do you guys want to try this edible that we're testing? And they're like, yeah. And they were both like, once a really high powered criminal defense attorney, she was like laughing with her face in a pillow. And my other friend is a pretty famous photographer. She was also like, I'm sorry, I have to take a nap. And they both just passed out and I ate dinner basically alone. But yes, I was marketing ganja in the hopes of developing a cannabis brand.
But I say it out of admiration because like it was just the most, to me, Kelly Catrone thing of just, hey, I know everyone here. I'm going to give you a little gift. And they were ecstatic.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like an hour into the dinner or whatever, I saw them cooking and they were just high.
They're always laughing. Yeah, because the Rastas always have the best weed.
Oh my God, yeah.
Do you actually smoke or do you just...
No, these are just secretly, these are incense, but
I like
the
look. Do you want me just to like blow vape? Because this is another thing. Let's talk about these fucking things.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about vapes. Okay, I don't smoke, but I do now, okay?
Wait, so you never went from cigarettes to a vape. You went from nothing to a vape?
No. I went from cigarettes to not smoking after my dad died of emphysema. And the reason was is that we were at the table while he was dying of emphysema smoking about how horrible it was that he was dying. And I just had this thing like, wow, this is pathetic. So you got to quit smoking. I was like 40.
Yeah.
And I didn't smoke. I got hypnotized. It worked.
You think it, or like, did it really? Because I've heard people hypnotize
the people that
to
like
break things.
Hypnotize like Demi Moore and this guy named Alan Carr. He wrote this book called Safe and Easy Effective Way. And there was this guy named Demian who was one of his top hypnotist trainers. And he came to my office. And the way that they do it is they tell you to smoke through the session. And then they give you all this information. And what you basically figure out is that people who smoke to feel like a non-smoker. So it's kind of like an ass backward thing. So nicotine is something that you detox from within 5 to 7 hours. You're like, you'd have to look up the statistics, but I remember it as being like 70%, which is why people get really antsy on planes.
Yeah.
Like within the first day, you're already physically pretty much almost detoxed. Like the detox is over, but the mental part is really crazy.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, he did it. I smoked through the whole thing, and then I never smoke. For 3 days, I was not fun to be around, but I didn't smoke again. And then all my clients are like in their 20s and 30s, and they're all designers.
Hitting their little USBs.
And everybody's just like this all the time. And I'm like, what is that? And they're like, it's a vape. And I'm like, is it weed? And they're like, no. I'm like, so what's in it? And they're like, nicotine. And I was like, really? Do you like it? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, why do you like it? And they're like, it just feels really good. And I was like, okay, I want to try it.
Did you take a fat rip from it?
I did. I got really high for like the first month that I was using those. Like I'd be like outside of like Blue Ribbon Sushi and I'd be like.
Okay, but that's me inside of Blue Ribbon Sushi after getting high before going
in. Oh, really?
Oh my God,
so
dinners?
There.
I love getting high
if
before
you guys are
a dinner.
In New York, go to Blue Ribbon Sushi. They don't take reservations, really.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't care.
It's a good place there. I love
it. The food is so good.
It really is.
We also gave them a bunch of weed because they're all Japanese hospitality people and they all want to get high.
They're like, we need this.
Yeah, we were also distributing free samples at Blue Ribbon to the employees there. But you know what? It helps you get a table.
That
you know
it
what?
Does.
They help you pick a good bottle of sake. Like, I'm not a sake expert. They can hook you up. When you're hooking them up, they hook you up.
Do you like warm or cold?
I like both.
Yeah.
I just think sake is like, it's dangerous though. You have to be careful.
It's crazy because
it creeps up on you.
You don't feel anything. And then you stand up to go to the bathroom and you're like, oh my God, I'm shit faced. Yeah.
Sake is, it's dangerous. I had my ex-boyfriend, not the same guy I told you about, but another guy I dated. He drank so much sake at Matsuhisa in LA one night that I just couldn't even bear him anymore. I'm like, I'm leaving. He's like, you're not leaving. I'm leaving. And he like took off his shirt and he walked shirtless like home, like down Los Angeles in LA. It was like so pathetic.
You just drive by him. You're like,
I was like, later, have fun with yourself, sake man. Well, we're having fun now.
I love this.
So reality TV, that you asked me that, so we can go back to that if you want. So I got a phone call one day from Adam DeVillo,
who noticed. Yeah, the Hills creator.
The Hills, yeah. With Liz Gately and Tony DeSanto. But he called me and he said, hi, my name's Adam DeVillo, and Lisa Love and Anna, you know, told me to call you. We're looking for somebody to replace Teen Vogue on The Hills. And I was like, what's The Hills? Because I don't watch television. Yeah. Anybody who knows me, I watch like spiritual, like watch the Gaia Network. Okay. I watch like.
I didn't even know that existed until right now.
It does. But I didn't know what The Hills was. And then the girls in my office were like, what? And I'm like, I don't know. They want us to be on some TV show called The Hills. And they're like, Kelly, that's like the number one rated show on MTV. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, Vogue's on it. I didn't even know that. Like, the girls in my office, no, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know it existed.
Well, also, like, I feel like this sound, like, I found myself having conversations of times that were not that long ago that, like, some people, like, can't wrap their head around. Like, reality TV wasn't this powerhouse of an entertainment vertical. It was, like, early days and, like, people didn't pay attention to it. Like, it was, like, for kids, like, well, teens.
There were 5 million people watching the show, and it was before, like, Amazon and Hulu and all these other streamers, so there was network, and then there were a few.
But it wasn't, like, there was, like the Keeping Up with the Kardashians and all of these. Yeah, it was just very few reality shows, and this one, I think, resonated with a lot of younger people because it was some girl going to a city to...
It's a small town girl. It's kind of like what we're talking about with exactly. our stories. So anyway, they're like, do you want to be on the show? I looked at all the numbers of what they were doing, and I thought, this is a great thing for my clients. Like, they're selling advertising for $300,000 for 15 seconds, and I can have this. And I'm like, sure, I'll do it. What I didn't know was that the retail economy was going to crash and that MTV would, like, save my company. It would help me support my mom. It would put my daughter through private school. It would allow me to buy a house when every PR company, they were just dropping. I didn't know that. So the first season, I'm like, I'll do it for free. The second season, I'm like, this is kind of a joke. I should be getting paid. Like, I don't want to do this anymore for free. Then the second season, I think I got paid, like, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20 an ep. And we were shooting like 20 eps, but 20,000. And then
I didn't think they were
Then it went up way higher than that, because after I realized that I was like the villain, and not only was I the villain, but I was providing like the backdrop of like the real fashion shit for them too. I was like, okay.
You were like legitimizing them.
Yes. And my lawyer, Joel McEwen. Hi, Joel. I love you. I'll always do deals with you. Always. And Mike Castrillo. I was like getting kind of bitchy by this point. And I'm like, Lauren and Whitney are making all this money. Like, I don't understand. Like, I'm providing the backdrop. I should be a producer and I want more money or I'm not coming back. And then Joel says to me, oh my God, the business affairs person at MTV, I don't think she realizes that your contract's about to expire and they think that they have you locked, but I don't want to complain right now because your contract's going to expire and then we can bump you up like super high. And so that's exactly what happened. And here's a little tip, free career tip. If you hire people to work for you and you're not a lawyer, let's say you hire a lawyer, like, listen to them. Like, don't think that you know more than them. And because I was a good listener and I listened to Joel, then I like upped my rate like crazy. Like,
oh my God.
A lot.
So you really just like fell into it and thought, like,
what a great thing for my clients. Then it's happening. Then it got really crazy. And everybody could tell, like, I got really fat. I gained a lot of weight. You can say that, right?
Yeah.
I gained a lot of weight and I got really nervous. Like, with being recognized, like, I didn't like that. I'd like people to know, like, oh, hey, you're smart.
Totally.
You know, like, you can command the room. Like, you're a shot caller. But, like, being in Target and having people be afraid of you or screaming at you or, like, oh, my God, and it was, like, what's going on? That was not the best time for me. Like, I personally didn't love it. And then they were like, oh, we want to do a spinoff on The City. So I did my City time with Roxy Olin and Whitney. Then they were like, oh, Bravo was like, we want a show with her. And I was like, okay. So I went back to MTV and I'm like, I'm going to go to Bravo now. And they're like, no, stay here. I got to Bravo. I hated it. Like, just in the shooting period, forget the show. Like, I was so unhappy there. And as Andy Cohen likes to say, I was not a good Bravo celebrity. Boo-hoo.
Did he say that about you?
He said it to my fucking face.
I mean, okay, at least, like, he said it to your face and not on...
I mean, he said it about me, and then after he told other people that, and he, like, made me cry, and I called him about it, he said that I was not a good Bravo celebrity because he thought I was, like, talking shit about Bravo, but I really did not have a good experience on that
network. Well, like, if the shoe fits.
I mean, Adam DeVillo and Liz Gately and being at MTV, they treated me really well, and Bravo was like a joke. Like, my EPs, which I also EP'd my own show, nobody listened to me, I realized it was a Mercy Fuck title. I was like, I used to be a competitive figure skater. I think we should go to my hometown and I should try to, like, skate the 12-year-olds out of the rink. I think that would be, they're like, no, okay, we don't want to do
for
that.
For the record, I'd watch the fuck out of
we'll
that.
We'll go.
We'll do that on my channel.
So that was, like, the Bravo moment. And while I was shooting Bravo, Tony DeSanto and Liz Gately, who were the heads to MTV, called me up. And they're like, hey, we want you to come back to the network. And we would like you to do this show where you go to meet, like, young kids that have a dream. And you, like, kind of boot camp them. Not like Dance Moms, but, like, really try to help them get their businesses and their dreams to work. So we shot a pilot. So we did the Bravo thing. They were over me. They really didn't like my show. The EPs didn't care about it. Magical Elves, they were horrible. They were, like, too busy, like, trying to be with Sarah Jessica Parker and China Chow. And they were working on that
art
show.
Was Bravo wanting, like, a Sex in the City kind of show?
No, they were doing an art show.
Oh.
And the point is that the EPs just never came on set. They didn't know anything about the show. We had a straight showrunner, and the showrunner is the person who decides the storylines that you're going to work on.
Yeah, that's crazy. You had a straight
one.
And
they wore Dickies and, like, puffer coats and Timberlands, and it was
stupid. All I remember is you had this one employee who, like, had Rick Owens everything.
He's a famous stylist now. Do you not know that?
I'm terrible with names.
Andrew Muckamal. He is Margot Robbie's stylist and Zoe Kravitz's stylist.
I just remember him talking about Rick Owens and me thinking, like, who is Rick Owens?
He was great.
Looking back, I was like, he was so fucking ahead of his time.
He was way ahead of his time.
Like,
he's really great. He kind of fulfilled my Addams Family fantasy because I always felt like we were also Morticia. Like,
was he
Skinner,
like the son you never had?
Yeah, he was like the perfect gay son.
I get that.
I really loved him. And we used to do really fun things together, like jump out of taxi cabs and just when we couldn't take the drivers anymore because they were sexist.
I loved Cal on Earth.
Like, I mean, we could go through that sometime. Anyway, so that was the Bravo thing. So then I did that. Then my pilot didn't get picked up because Liz and Tony were leaving MTV and we were kind of like cast aside on that. And I was like, whatever, okay, this is it. Like, I arced it out. It was cool. I had a really good run. And that was it. And it's like, I was still running People's Revolution
the whole
time. You were
still fully working.
Yes. And so then, like, a few months later, Top Model called. And then they're like, Tyra and Ken Mock were on the phone. And they're like, hey, we want you to replace Andre Leon Talley on America's Next Top Model. And I was like, sure, let's go. And it was great because I did, like, I think 18, 19, 20, 25 seasons. But, like, every reveal at the end, you go to some really magnificent place. So I'd, like, fly with my nanny and my daughter. Like, we went all over the world. We went to Hong Kong, Macau.
On, like, a network's
Sydney.
Dime.
Yeah, we got paid for everything. It was total grifting. It was awesome. So then, yeah, and then that was it. And then that was it for a while. And now there's, like, all this crazy stuff going on again.
Would you ever return to reality TV?
I've been offered two shows in the last, like, 3 weeks, and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we're thinking about maybe rebooting Kill on Earth because Ava Catrone now works at People's Revolution.
Which, is that, like, so trippy for you?
No, like, I'm aware. I'm her mom. I gave birth to her.
But, like, I know that, like, some people, like, I guess, like, entertainers who, like, have kids and people are like, do you want them to be in the industry? Like, were you
it's
always...
It's too late. She's like the Amish child.
But was she always like into it?
She drives a tractor, you know? Like, she was driving the tractor when she was 8. Like, I was a single mom since birth. I broke up with her dad when we were pregnant. So I was like a grab-and-go mom. Like, I had my kid with me everywhere. Like, I breastfed her on catwalks. Like, supermodels would literally... We'd be, like, running a model rehearsal, and I'd have her, like, here, and I'd have a headset on, and she'd be breastfeeding, and then, like, the top models of the world would come by, and they'd be like, oh, baby, baby, baby. Like, Vivian Westwood had this, like, wild red hair, and I would breastfeed Ava in front of Vivian, and I just remember that Ava was fascinated by the color of Vivian's hair, you know? Like... And it's funny because yesterday I was with Cora Corey, who's Vivian's granddaughter. And when she was like, I don't know, 4 or 5, we were in LA opening the Agent Provocateur store because Vivian's son, Joe Corey, and his wife at the time, Serena Reese, they are Agent Provocateur. So I ended up signing Agent Provocateur because I was representing Vivian. But yesterday, Cora told me, she was like, you know, raised British royalty, basically. I mean, Vivian Westwood's her grandma, her grandfather's Malcolm McLaren.
Yeah.
Did the Sex Pistols and Culture Club and, you know, Bow Wow Wow and all these bands. And she was like, Kelly, I just really want to thank you because my parents, like, never wanted me to feel privileged. And as soon as I met you, you took me to Fred Siegel and you brought me a pair of vintage Python cowboy boots when I was 4. And then a bikini, but it wasn't because of the gifts, but you were always like an auntie to me. And now she's like 26 and running Vivian's foundation. Like, it's crazy, you know?
That is wild.
So they grew up in the business. Like, Ava did backstage check-in when she was 12. And like, one time this photographer was like, you know, basically like, fuck you, like, I'm important. And she like started crying and she's like, I'm Ava Catrone, like, my mother is Kelly Catrone. You're going to have to talk to her about it. And you could, she said the photographer just went like ashen because it was like, yo. Like, there's 2 12-year-old girls in the back. Of course, I had other check-in people
totally.
There. And I didn't have 2 12-year-olds running the check-in. But
sometimes it feels
like
that.
I know, but people will
shows.
Be like, well, that's what you get. Like, please save those comments for someone else.
Totally.
Of course, we had real check-in. But yeah, she's just grew up in the business. I'm surprised because, I mean, I don't think she'll stay in like PR, but her boyfriend's a photographer and
yeah.
We just made a documentary together that got into Tribeca Film Festival.
Shut up.
Yes, and I won a Clio Award this week.
I just saw that on your story. Congrats.
Gay Sheep Show and a One Award, and then this thing is in Tribeca. It's like crazy. So I think maybe they'll just make movies or have like a studio or
cute.
Her goal is to get a townhouse where I can live in the grandma section for free. How cute. Like, how cute is that?
That is, like, every kid's dream.
She's like, Mommy, you took care of me my whole life, and you're not getting any younger. And just so you know, Oliver and I are going to make a lot of money, and we're going to get a townhouse, and you can live with us. Like,
no, that's real as fuck. I bought a house 17 houses down the street for my mom.
You did?
Yeah, because I'm like, that's my mom. She provided everything for
me. You have to be nice to the mothers. They're treated so badly. This is what I mean. It's the time for people to recognize the importance of the feminine, like,
absolutely.
In our moms.
Absolutely.
Like, why? I have a question about this, because you're a comedian.
Okay.
Because you are. You're an actor and a comedian, right? Do you consider yourself that?
A comedian, actor, like, no, but...
Okay, so we'll call
if you
comedian.
Say it, then yeah, I'll start
Well, I mean,
I'll
it didn't hurt Jim Carrey. It didn't hurt Jerry Seinfeld.
True.
I mean, just branding advice, I'd say that you're talent.
Hi, I'm Chris, I'm talent.
So my thing about moms, I'd like to make a plea right now for Mother's Day. I think you shouldn't take your mom out to Mother's Day. I think your mom should leave and go do something for herself. Like, I think Mother's Day should
be like, I'm dipping for 24 hours, no contact.
Yes, and Stephanie Skinner, who was on Kel and Earth, who works again
for me. I met her
at
the Filthy Dinner.
Yes, and
obsessed
she
with
works
her.
For me. Well, we work together, let's put it that way. So that's another thing that could be good with Kel and Earth. But I was like, what are you doing for Mother's Day, Skinner? Because now she's 40. She was 21 when I met her.
I know, she has a kid.
I know, Marnie. And I was like, Skinner, what are you doing? She goes, you want to know what I want to do? I want to check into a fucking hotel. I don't want to check into a fucking hotel on Saturday. And I want to stay till Monday. I don't want French toast. And I'm like, that's right. Like, what are we doing? If I have time, I'm going to try to change this holiday. Because
if I have time,
and there's some
add
holidays
it to the
I
list.
Want to kill. I want to kill Thanksgiving.
Well, yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's like celebrating Hitler's birthday.
Yeah.
And do you know what my mom says to me about it?
What?
She says, oh, please. You know, if you don't... I said, Mom, like, listen, the indigenous people were never friends with the pilgrims.
Yeah, like, this wasn't like a kumbaya kind of thing.
Engineered by FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt. And I love Eleanor Roosevelt, but this is like a fucked up thing. Why are we allowing this to be perpetuated, you know, in the culture? And she goes, can't you just think of something to be grateful for, to be thankful for? It's one day a year.
I'm like, I can do that every day.
Exactly. I give thanks every fucking day. I don't need to kill 70 million, I don't know, 7 million, 700 million, however many fucking turkeys. And also kind of shit on the indigenous people.
100%.
Like, what the fuck? And you know who I'd like to, if we're in the mood, to get some clickbait?
Who?
Macy's. Like, I think they should change this. They need to do something.
They really do have the power to...
It's not enough to have some indigenous dancers at the front when you have another float with the fucking pilgrims. Like, and the problem is, because I also, ex-boyfriend, used to live with John Trudell, who was the president of the American Indian Movement, who led the invasion of Alcatraz, and who had the largest FBI file. What did we learn tonight? Kelly Catrone loves a bad boy. And so, but it's like, it's crazy if you think about it. And there's not enough people in the indigenous world because it's been so ethno-cleansed to speak up. Like, this is not okay.
But it's also...
And I want to make another thing. Another thing we should stop on.
Hit it.
I'm not even drunk. I wish we could get drunk. It would be so much more
fun. I mean,
fun.
Listen, we've got a little more wine.
Okay. The other thing I want to stop, if you guys are into it, is... And maybe you could help me because I'm too busy and I don't have time, but I would like to... Is Halloween, okay? I love Halloween. Okay. I don't want to kill Halloween. Okay. One of my favorite holidays.
I really almost just got defensive.
No, you don't have to with me, Avi.
Okay.
What I'm against is this green witch thing. This thing of this old crone with like warts on her face and green. Like the witches were really the doulas. Chic. The doulas and the healers of their communities before they were killed. Around 75 to 80% of them were women. But men were also accused of being witches and killed. Probably the gays.
I was just going to say the exactly. homosexuals. It's always...
We're always together. You always, wherever there's a power,
we're like this. We're like this and on the run. Were you like always spiritual growing up?
I mean, I had like spiritual experiences. So it's not that I'm a spiritual person. Is I was having occult experiences. And so I had to figure out why this was happening. And was it real or was I losing my mind? And like, what is... the spirit world about. I mean, if you ask me, like, when I was 25, no, you know. But right around that time, I did have a really profound spiritual experience. So,
what does that mean?
Well, I wrote about it in my first New York Times bestselling book,
which I did read, but I have the memory of a dead goldfish. It's in my mom's house.
I'm just trying to be funny. What happened was I kind of bought into everything that people told young women to do, which was be pretty, be successful, marry a rich guy who's like cool. And, like, you know, be successful and win, win, win. And I came from the generation, like, this generation's like, I want live, work, balance. My generation was like, I want coke and I want fucking money.
Yeah.
And so after I had done all of that and I kind of spun out, I started a company called Catrone Weinberg. I was a publicist. I started as a music publicist for Susan Blonde. Love her. Hi, Susan. And she was Michael Jackson's publicist. Tell me why not all these people. And then from there, I became the director of PR at Spin. And then from there, I called Jason Weinberg, who was my intern. And we started a company called Catrone & Weinberg. And we represented, like, Nile Rodgers and CNC Music Factory and the Fine Young Cannibals and, you know, all these different bands. Delight, like, every club, Peter Gation, Cafe Tabac, like, just we were rocking it. We had no idea what the fuck we were doing. We had to carry quarters in our bag because there weren't even credit cards to make a phone call. Like, we didn't have cell phones or anything.
Oh,
like, it was another time. Anyway, so I did all of that. And he was just naturally inclined to represent talent. And I didn't like working with celebrities. I thought they were boring and they required a lot of extra things besides the PR. Like, you have to go to dinner with them. You have to carry their clothes. They want to know what's going on with their flights. And somehow when you're the publicist and you work with celebrities... In addition to being the PR person, you're also responsible for all this other crazy shit. Like, figure out what the assistant... Like, no. Like,
yeah.
I was never into it. He really liked that. And so we naturally grew apart. And that ended up with me living in Topanga, California, losing my mind and telling him. I think he said, we just signed Tina Louise and she refuses to talk about Gilligan's Island. And I like lost my shit and I said, I want to sell, I'm out. I think I sold my shares in the company for $5,000 at the time. And that company today is now called Untitled, which is the biggest management company in the world. And so I started that company with Jason as Katrina Weinberg. It became known as Untitled. And then I just kind of spiraled out. You know, I was really unhappy. Like, I had all these quote things, and none of it made me feel like I knew myself or anything.
Was it all stuff that you thought growing up, or like,
yeah,
beforehand?
It was a magic sauce. Okay, like, yeah. You're going to have this. You're going to have great sex. You're going to travel the world. You're going to have a guy who's going to stick up for you.
People
are going to know your
name. On the tail end of that, where I like got everything I thought, and now I'm like, oh my God, now what?
That's really bad.
It's awful.
And so what happened then was, I don't know, I started getting high, you know, and just like...
I do know.
not with like weed, but with way worse drugs.
Oh.
And then I just woke up one day and I wanted to kill myself. And I was like, this voice said to me, you'll kill yourself. There'll be a miracle by midnight. And I was like, okay, good, because this is fucking shit. Like, I'm not into this. I'm not into being here like this. This world is not for me.
That's how I feel.
You know, and it was really bad. And so I, by this point, had lost my house. I had no money. I was living in a cheap hotel room over Swingers in LA on Beverly Boulevard.
Oh my God, Swingers.
Yes, I was living in that. It used to be a really cheap hotel and like, you know, prostitutes, drug addicts. And I was there and I was selling books that I had bought to a bookstore so I could get money to pay for my hotel room. And I went there one night, and the day this voice told me I was going to kill myself or there'd be, I woke up one day and this voice said, you are going to kill yourself or there'll be a miracle by midnight. And I was like, I'm fucking ready to go. So I owed the hotel some money. I didn't have any cash. So I walked from Beverly and Laurel to what used to be called the Bodhi tree, which is the Buddhist tree of divine knowledge. And I went there and I was selling my books. And as I was waiting to find out how much money they were going to give me for my books so I could pay for this hotel room, this guy with like long white hair and a white beard, like literally like
a wizard,
came up to me and he goes, you better watch out. That moon's going to get you. And I started crying. I said, please don't say that. I'm in really big trouble right now. And he said to me, hey, pal, give me your number. And I gave him the number for this hotel, the Beverly Laurel Hotel, where I was living. And I went home and I ran to the hotel where I'd collaged all my press clippings from being like an it girl in New York. I was out of my mind.
Aww.
I was like literally out of my mind. And then the phone rang and it was this guy and he goes, I've got something for you. And I was like, okay, well, you can come up. And he came to the door and he said to me, are you willing to go to any length to be in the light? And I said, as long as I don't have to fuck you. And then he said to me, if you only knew what was living inside of you, you'd know I want nothing to do with you right now. And he told me to lay down on the bed. And I laid down on the bed. I had clothes on, obviously.
How old are you at this point?
20. I'm having my Saturn return. I was 26, 27. Like Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, like everybody else, right? So that's like the astrological coming of age. Like,
yeah.
26 to 29 is rough.
Brutal.
Nobody talks about it. It's called your Saturn return.
Yeah.
It's very serious. It's like you can die during those times. And it happens again when you're 58. So it just...
Oh, great.
You know, it's fine. You can have an astrologer and consult them. But anyway, so he told me to lay down on the bed and he did this thing. And I saw my light body sit up and I saw these two images. One of who I thought was a French woman and another Indian woman. And I said, oh, I'm seeing these women. And he goes, oh, you're one of the mother's girls. And he's like, you need to grow this like a mantra and grow it inside of yourself. And he gave me the mantra and I woke up the next day and the hotel was trying to get me arrested for non-payment and the cops came and then I ended up calling him and then I ended up going to live in another fucking shitty hotel and I called my grandmother who was really poor to like Western Union me money. Like I didn't even have a bank account. And from there, I like lived in this like shit hotel and detoxed for like a couple weeks. And then I ended up finding this apartment. And yeah, and then I just, everything kind of grew from there. But I literally, that was like a really heavy time. Like I had to die.
Yeah.
And you'd like this because Scorpios were death and rebirth.
Oh my
right?
God, duh.
So the goal is, can you die and keep your body?
Wow.
You know what I mean? And so that's kind of what happened to me. So that moment set me on this like crazy spiritual path of like just doing that mantra. And I did that mantra and I did it with all my heart. And every day, like my life got better. And slowly it was like one step, another step, another step, another step, another step. It was never like, oh, boom, here's
your, it never is.
Your, you know, fruit salad bouquet. Like, no.
Edible arrangement.
Edible, again, edible
fruit
arrangement.
Salad bouquet.
I don't know what it's called.
Crazy,
edible
Kelly.
Arrangement. My mother sent me one. That's what I thought they were called. I don't know.
Thank you for your fruit salad bouquet, Mom.
I don't know what they're called. I don't know anything.
That's
about
way better than edible arrangement.
It's
fuck,
fruit
that's...
salad bouquet.
Oh, fruit
FSB.
Salad.
For sure, bro. Get your fruit salad bouquet, FSB. When you know, you know. It's fruit salad bouquet. Yeah, so that's what started that whole magic thing with me.
Wow.
So, yes, I am kind of an open, I'm just somebody that gets exposed to the spirit world. I think the veil for me is thinner than most people.
I feel like you're very, like, open and accepting to it.
Well, because I know it's real.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's real. When you start realizing like that all these spirits are coming to you, like stuff happens, right? And if you get really good at it, you can control it like a water faucet. So you can be like, yeah, I'm not going to turn this on right now. Like this is not happening. But every once in a while, when you have the ability to control the amplification or the energy, and you can be like, no, store's not open. No, thank you, not now. Sometimes the spirits slip through and they still want your attention. I don't really think I'm a medium the medium.
Teresa,
Long Island medium.
Yeah, oh my God.
She's pretty great.
I live for Teresa Caputo.
I've never met her.
I haven't either.
Can we
but...
ask her to come give us a reading? Teresa Caputo, we're sharking for you right now.
Oh my God, like, I will pull out my knee pads to get on the ground to pray for you to come. And then what happened at the Plum Bush?
Oh, so the Plum Bush. So what happens is, you know, Ava and I have a house in the Hudson Valley. When she was little, she was in school. So we would only go on the weekends. We would usually Friday night at 8 because traffic's really bad in the city. And we would cruise upstate to our house in this town. So what happened was, you know, we had been going there for, you know, months, but I'd never eaten at this restaurant called the Plum Bush Inn. And I was with my nanny at the time, and she was really funny. And we would just sing Meatloaf songs, like I Would Do Anything for Love in the car and like Tom Petty or whatever. And then, you know, I was like, hey, Rose, I think we're actually going to make it early because the restaurant's closed at 9. We could probably go to this Plum Bush. I'm pretty hungry. Do you want to eat? She says, yeah. So I say, okay, cool. So we pull into the Plum Bush Inn.
Was this somewhere in Hudson Valley or that you would like always pass and
it's
be like, we
Cold
should eat
Spring.
There?
Yes, it was in Cold Spring. It's now a school called the Manitou School. But this gets really strange. At the time, it was an inn. And they had like, I don't know, 3-4 rooms. And they had a restaurant there. And it was like, oh, it's your wedding anniversary. Come for filet mignon. But it's like an average restaurant that was very expensive. And it's for people in the neighborhood, like, they would go there for like a wedding or, you know, like if you were from New York, you might go there once a week. But for people that were locals, it wasn't like where local people went.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we go into the fucking restaurant. It's like 8:40. They obviously don't want us to be there. They're almost closing. We order our food, whatever. And all of a sudden, I start getting this message. And it's like, my name's Isabel, and this used to be my house.
Are you hearing it?
It's a feeling, and then it translates. So I'm like clairsentient and clairaudio.
Okay.
And sometimes clairvoyant. But anyway.
Clairvoyant is the mind reading.
It's seeing. It doesn't have to be mind reading.
Oh, really?
Like you could see a tree that turns into like a hula dancer or clouds that reveal an image that they want, spirit wants you to see or know.
Okay.
It works different for everybody.
Okay.
Anyway, this voice feeling says, my name's Isabel, and this used to be my house. And I'm just sitting there with my nanny and my daughter. No one knows what's going on. And I'm psychically saying back to the spirit, like, we're not going to do this now, okay? Like, I'm tired. I fucking worked all week.
Store is closed.
Not going to do this. I am not open for you to communicate through. And it kept going. My name's Isabel. And then it was like, tell them to move the chandelier. I said, tell them to move the chandelier. And I'm like still ignoring it. It's like, and the piano, and tell them to move the piano. And so finally, like, I couldn't shake the spirit. Like, the spirit was really insistent. So we're ordering like normal people. This is going on in the spirit world. And so I say, hey, is there a manager and owner here? And they go, well, the manager and the owner are the same person. I forgot her name. And they're like, would you like to see her? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, everything's great. We're so happy, grateful to be here. Thank you for having us, blah, blah, blah. So this woman comes in. She's kind of like a strung out, ginger-haired, kind of like middle-aged woman who's running an inn, like what you would expect her to look like. And she goes, hi, I don't remember her name. Can I help you? And I said, can I ask you a question? And she's like, yes. And I'm like, is there someone named Isabel that this used to be her house? And she's like, that's Isabel. And she points to this oil painting of a very beautiful redhead. And the weird thing is the manager at the time was kind of like a disheveled redhead. And I'm looking at the juxtaposition between this Nicole Kidman and then this Roseanne Barr character. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, can I ask you another question? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, was there a chandelier there? She goes, well, as a matter of fact, there was. We just moved it like 2 weeks ago. And I said, well, Isabel wants you to put it back. Just like that. And she goes, excuse me? I said, listen, I don't know what's going on, but like, did she used to be a school teacher? Because she kept saying, I'm a school teacher, I know, like, and she goes, yes, she was a school teacher, and she moved to Europe, she married a very wealthy guy, she came from a very wealthy family, she married a wealthy guy, she moved to Europe, became a school teacher with him, they were married, they broke up, they got divorced, like, at a time when that didn't happen, and then I guess you came back and became a school teacher if that happened, and this was a school. And I was like, did you move a piano? And she's like, yeah. I said, okay, listen, this place is fucking full on haunted. Are you aware that your inn is haunted? She goes, oh, yes, I know all about it. And I'm like,
they're telling me to move the chandelier again.
Would you like this to stop? And we can matriculate her into a more peaceful way of being here, or we can exit her out of this place because this is crazy. And she says, okay. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm a single mom. I have to be with my daughter all day, but I will come at around 11:30 tomorrow night and around midnight, and we'll clear the space. But I need you to go because I don't have time to go to the store and get like an odd number of lemons, 21, 33, any odd number, some cloves, some cigars, incense, and I'll come and sage, and I'll come and clear the space with you. And she said, great. The next day at like 3:30, when I'm like gearing up for my big ghost clearing at the Plum Bush, she called me up and she said, please don't come here ever again. Well, the story gets better. She loses the inn, right? And now the inn is a school. It's a private school. And I'm sure that Isabel
runs that thing like the Navy.
Running the school like a Navy. It's a little kid's school. And it's a private school. Yeah. It's called the Manitou School.
What?
But it might not be haunted. It's a very good school.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I don't want anybody to think.
No, we're not taking away from.
I'm very, like, pro Manitou. Yeah. Mara Hoffman sent her son there. I'm very pro the school. But yes, it used to be a home that was owned by a woman named Isabel. And her ghost came on a Friday night while I was just trying to get some fucking chow and get home and call it a day.
And like, that moment doesn't faze you at all.
There's nothing to do about it. I mean,
like, I'm hearing that and just like,
it's wild.
It's wild.
It's wild. Do you have magical experiences? Let me interview you. Chris Clements, I'm flipping a bitch. This is Kelly Catrone.
Kelly Catrone flips the bitch. What are you going to ask?
What is your take on spiritual? Like, do you have like spirit? You must have spiritual experiences. You're such a magical person.
Thank you.
You're a Scorpio. Tell me. What makes you unsure about the spirit world?
I don't, it's not that I feel unsure. Like, I definitely believe in, I guess I don't know necessarily like the exact thing that I believe in, but like, I definitely
believe in goodness.
Absolutely. I believe, okay. I'm a more believer than not of like reincarnation.
Okay.
But I do believe in like spirits.
Do you have a compass inside of yourself that says like, hey, this is really the right thing to do? You don't always have to, like, my definition of sin is when your inner voice and your life experience tell you something and you still do the opposite, then it's just such a waste of time.
I usually...
Like vaping.
There are things that I do that I'm like, you shouldn't do this. And right. I'm still got the USB in my mouth.
Right.
But I don't know. I believe that energy can't be destroyed or created.
Okay, so that's
so
all
like
need.
If
that's
people all. Have energy, that's got to go somewhere.
Correct.
And I don't know. I think like my Nana who passed away, this is like... I mean, she would be mortified to know that this is, but like every time that we're having like a family event or we're doing something big with the family, I see a Mr. Softy truck and she always wanted a Mr. Softy when she would come into the city and see it in Delaware, in like Pennsylvania. In like,
so you think your grandma is, it's a symbol?
Yeah. Like to me, I'm just like, what are the odds that we're all going down to surprise my mom at the beach and we see a fucking Mr. Softy truck on like
that's
a random
cool.
street of Delaware.
That's
so like
cool.
I do believe in, but I don't have the ability of like someone named Isabel is talking to me, you know?
No, but have you ever walked into a room and thought, shit, something bad's gonna happen?
Yes.
Okay,
oh my
well,
God.
That's intuition.
Okay.
You know, have you ever gone to cross the street and then jump backward and like almost miss getting hit by a car or a bus in
no.
New York? Never.
Oh, I mean, I guess, but like to me, I'm just like, oh, bummer. I'm like, they had their chance.
Do it. I dare you.
Some days I'm like, come on, pedal to the metal. And that's like what I've really kind of tried to become. Cause like growing up in Delaware, it's like every time I talk about like my upbringing, I'm like, I don't want to sound like I'm shitting on it. It just was different. Like nobody leaned into spirituality in terms
yeah,
of like
not.
Extra, like beyond the living. Like there's a lot of religious people.
That might have been good though. You might have ended up like living in Salem and selling black voodoo dolls. Like you don't really know. Like they say that the soul picks the parents.
Whoa.
And they also say in the occult world that when you're procreating, it's really important to like have like a good fuck because that soul should be brought down through like a passionate, full love.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you like learn all of this?
Oh yeah, I'm old.
Like,
I told you, I'm
your,
60.
But like yourself or like did you read that? Like experience?
I mean, all these things like, happened to me. Like what you're talking about, like just what I told you about in Topanga. Like, hey, I did all this. This is bullshit. I was skinny. I was pretty. I was married to Andy Warhol's protege. I grew up in the Warhol family. I own a hot PR company. I'm fucking miserable. And I don't know what I'm doing. I want to die. Like, really, like, I don't want to be here. Like, this is too hard for me. But what else is there to do? Like, what else is there to do besides, like, trying to get into the magic of what it means to be alive. Like, I truly believe that this is a college. It's like a university. But people think the goodness is going to come in like a lottery box. It's not coming in a lottery box. It's like, sometimes you have to stick up for yourself. Sometimes you have to fight.
Yeah, sometimes you have to like really learn the lesson to receive like the, oh, this was worth it.
Yeah, or even things like betrayal. Like, work in this industry. Like, betrayal or like, creating stuff for people and then taking responsibility, like taking credit for your work. Like there's a lot of betrayal in this industry.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
You know, which is why I think, you know, my book is like, yeah, you're going to cry all fucking day. Like go outside. Like this is part of it. Like, but it's intense, you know? It's
yeah.
Intense. But I think if I, you know, I think we have to be selfish about what are we doing here? You know, and I think the answer is different for everyone because they're in different places of their incarnation. In this lifetime, I think I was supposed to understand what it means to struggle and what it means to break through a lot of stereotypes and what that was like being a woman, being put through that ringer, like in that way, and like being a single mom. Like, I never thought I would be a single mom, you know? I never thought I was going to give birth by myself. I was like programmed to believe I was going to get a push present. And I even knew, like, I said to my nanny, Nana, I think I'm going to have to buy my own push present. I had to buy my own push present. And I was like, this is fucked up. Like, I'm buying my own push present. Like, this is pathetic. I never thought I'd have a baby at 36. Like, I never thought I'd be married to somebody else, get pregnant, and go through a divorce. And da, da, da. I would have never thought any of those things. You know, but when I look at it, like for me, it's like my lifetime and it's not the same and it's not like the right one for everybody is I want to know what it means to be divine while you're alive. I want to see the magic in the world. I want to see all the fucking animals. I want to walk in the power and the majesty of nature. And if you think about the fashion industry, as evil and horrible as it is, and it does a lot of really bad things, it's one of the most interesting industries because it also is like, we're the Elmer Fudds of beauty. Like, we have like our gun and we're like, we're out hunting for beauty today. We want to bring beauty into the world. We want to bring disruption into the world. We want to bring storytelling into the world. We want to bring fantasy into the world.
This like makes me curious for you who's had such a long career.
Yes. This is where I put my hair up. Lots of stuff.
This is when you're getting into business. Obviously, there's changes over the years, especially with social media.
Oh, in the fashion industry?
Yeah. What have been, like, what's, would you say is your, the worst change and the best change you've noticed?
Do we have more wine?
Yeah. Oh my God, honey. Yeah, of course.
Sorry. I'm giving bars for free here. It's really weird because if I were to tell the truth, I mean, for me, People's Revolution, we've always been on the street. Like, we've always, like, you can look at my roster and nobody could ever say she's a gold digger, right? I think 40% of what I do for free, you know what I mean? And then, you know, I spent my whole career with young designers. And even when I've been working with big designers, there's still the alternative designers like Mugler, Paco Rabanne, Vivienne Westwood. So the only time, like, really big companies like Valentino would hire me is, like, when they tried everybody else who was a lot safer. And they're like, bring in that girl, the Kelly Cutrone from the People's Revolution. She'll do it for us, you know? I'm like, more like a sniper. You
yeah.
know? Like, we sent the army. We sent the Coast Guard. We can't do it.
Your last resort for some people.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, well, let's try something that's more disruptive.
Yeah.
It's really weird, you know, because Andy Warhol talked about it, right? He said everybody's going to have 15 minutes of fame. Like, every generation, like, everything changes every 5 to 7 years, mm-hmm. right? Music changes, clothes change, a look changes, like... You watch Truth or Dare, it's like a big no woke show. You know, Madonna's like, do you want to take a bath together? Like, you do that, now you're getting sued on a labor lawsuit by your like litigious interns. Like, you can't do shit like that.
Yeah.
I personally preferred a more freestyle time. I also think that there is a very congested freeway of ridiculousness. And just because you have a microphone from Staples and like a backdrop in your house, wherever you are, and you go like, slay, fierce, go. Like, I personally, it doesn't mean that a bunch of 17-year-olds in Idaho don't find you entertaining. But for me, I have zero interest in hearing your opinion because I'm watching what you're doing and you're taking the work of these design houses and you're taking the work of these stylists and you are inserting yourself in a conversation, which frankly, I don't really think you should be in. And even if you did, you really don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And then you're coming at it like, oh, but we want diversity and we want all of this stuff. But what are you doing? You're fucking slagging like these designers and these houses. And you have no
credentials.
The only thing you have is your opinion. That's cool. But for me, when I got into fashion, I had an opinion. I'd be sitting in these meetings and I'd have a designer go, I'm doing a pink mink gauchos for summer. And I'm thinking like Larry David, like, oh my God, we're not going to make any money. Like, they're not going to be able to pay the retainer. Like, no one's buying pink mink gauchos in fucking summer. Like, what are we doing? Somebody speak up. But I was in the generation where we were like, we suited up and we shut the fuck up. And we let those people like Carlene Cerf and Azzedine Alaia, we let them speak. We were like, well, you know what? I actually think it's cool. It's like, how dare you? Like, we were lashed. Like, we were the beaten children. Like, I've had computers thrown at my head, cell phones, like, total fucking shit. We wouldn't dare say shit like that.
Yeah, and it's not even to say, like, that's how things have to be. But, like...
But it's like, why are you talking? Like, here's
why are you coming in with very little experience?
Your title reflects what you should say. Like, you're an assistant. Your job is to assist. Nobody's asking you your opinion. If somebody wanted your opinion, you'd be in the C-suite. You're not in the C-suite.
Or they'd ask you, like, hey, we want another opinion.
What do you think about this, Quinn? I will say that to my assistant. The first 6 months we worked together, she'd be like, well, that reminds me when I was at sleepaway camp in Toronto. And I would like, you need to shut up. Seriously, I don't want to hear one more story about your family summer vacations. Like, I'm on a deadline. This is totally irrelevant.
We need money.
Very distracting. Yeah. And you want to know what? We work together today. She's in like 16 months. I'm so proud of her because people can, when she does say something now, it's important.
That's what I think a lot of people are lacking.
And it's in measure. And so when she says, did you know this guy left GQ and he's going to the New Yorker and he's doing a social media thing and blah, 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 blah. That's much more interesting than I went to sleepaway camp when I was 12 with Jody Weiner. Nobody cares. Why are you saying this? I'm not on the call yet. And what are you, you're going to entertain these people that are paying me $30,000 a month? Like, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Guess what? They don't want to hear that you went to sleepaway camp. Nobodyfuckingcares.com. Stop. Stop.
Oh my God, you also say .com?
Yeah, I say nobodycares.com.
Oh my God, I say nobody, like I say something something .com, .org, .net, .gov. Oh my God.
Yes, this is a Zodiac.
It really, like I'm like, wow, we are.
Do you know the Zodiac guy on Instagram that has the signs and he's like, corniest sign in the world, and then he rates them?
No, because I'm always afraid that I'll get to take it too personal.
Don't you think you have an advantage as a Scorpio in that department?
I always think I have an advantage as a Scorpio.
When you say you're a Scorpio, don't you think people think you're better in bed than you might be?
Yes. I think people think I'm better in bed than I might be. I think people think I'm smarter than I might be. I think people think I'm cooler than I might be.
I think you would. I mean, I don't want to have sex with you, but because I'm not stupid.
I didn't even ask.
No. But I'm saying, like, I think you would be good in bed because you're really sweet and sensitive.
Oh, thank you. I'm on so many antidepressants that I literally have zero sex drive.
Oh, that's a great thing.
Is it?
I went celibate for a year.
Still celibate?
Yeah.
How's that?
Great.
Love that.
I said to God, I have all this love to give. Like, I have so much love to give. Why do I have everything that I've ever wanted? But I've never had a true partner, and I've been married, and I've done all this stuff. And like, why have you forsaken me? Like, people sleep in bed as angels every night. There are people, and their ankles are wrapped around each other, regardless of they're straight, gay, whatever the fuck, however you identify, right? And they're sleeping like as angels, and they wake up in the middle of the night. They might make out. They might fuck. What are we doing? Nothing. We're sleeping in a bed alone. And I say to God, like, why would you do all of this to me? And I have so much love to give, and I have so much energy. And this is what God told me, and I'm going to introduce my dog to you. The mother said to me, okay, well, why don't you learn how to give it to yourself first? And then if you have any left over, give it to your family. And then if you have any left over, give it to the community. And if you have any left over, give it to the world. And if you still have any left over, give it to a dog. So I got a dog. I want to show you. Do you know my dog
is this
yet? Rebel.
Recent?
My two dogs died.
I know. I saw the Huskies pass.
Yeah. It was very...
Which I'm so sorry about.
It's okay. My dog psychically told me a year before, Mr. Magic. His name was Magic. His nickname was Mr. Magic. Magic. And I named him Magic because Yves Saint Laurent named all his dogs Magic. But he had French bulldogs, but I had Huskies. And... It was like a year before, and Magic said to me, I'm going to be dead in a year, and I just want you to prepare for my death. And I literally sat on my floor and cried over him for 3 days. Ava Catrone was there, and she's like, Mommy, what are you doing? And I'm like, Magic told me he was going to die. And at that point, I was like, Ava, you need to take the dogs more, because I like knew Magic was going to die. Like, of course I took care of them, but I had an apartment in the city that didn't allow dogs, so she would keep them in the city, and I'd keep them upstate. The female dog died first, and she died in July, almost a year ago. And then it was Fashion Week, and I finished early, which never happens. Like, it was like a Saturday at 5. We were supposed to work till midnight. We got all our work done, and I was like, oh, I'm going to put on a caftan and watch a Netflix documentary.
Period, as you should, queen.
So I, like, put on a caftan. I'm sitting in my fucking shit apartment on Mott Street. And Ava Catrone calls me. And she goes, Mommy, Magic's dead. And I was like, it was in the middle of Fashion Week. And the crazy thing was, I told my assistant and I told like my inner circle. I was like, watch, Magic's going to die in the middle of Fashion Week. And I was like, and I was about to have hip surgery, so I couldn't really walk. So it was very like Lord of the Flies moment where I was like, oh my God, where is he? She's like, he's in the apartment. And I was like, can you guys wrap him up in a sheet and bring him down because I won't be able to carry him. And they said yes. And so it was poor Ava. She was distraught. Her boyfriend. And then they called their best friend who came over. And they came down off their apartment carrying my dead dog. And, you know, Ava is becoming Jewish on her own. It's not like she's in a relationship. She just... And so I was like, we should cremate the dog. So when the first dog died, she's like, no, that's it's against my spiritual practice. We're going to bury them. So I had to find somebody to come and dig a grave for my first dog in July. And then the guy that came, he was so sweet. And I was like, I had to call him again. And I said, I'm so sorry, but the other dog's dead. And he's like, I'm coming. So I pick up the dog. Hold on. I'll show you the song that comes on. So I pick up the dog. My daughter's coming down the stairs of her apartment. You know, there's stairs that go up to her building. And they have the dog wrapped up in a sheet. And I'm like, put him in the back of the car. And so as I leave Manhattan to head up to our house in the Hudson Valley, it starts pouring rain. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then this song comes on the radio, which I had never heard before. Okay, so it's like, Here Comes the Rain Again by Macy Gray. So it's like, here comes the rain again. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And then I'm like, I'm too out of it to drive this vehicle. What if I get pulled over by a cop? And then I'm like, I'm going to be like, yo, I have a fucking dead dog in the back trunk of my car. Don't fuck with me. There's a dead dog. Yeah, so then we buried them, and then I ended up getting, I'll show you. She's really cute. So I got this black dog who's a black German Shepherd because I was like, I want a fucking security dog now. I'm not fucking around with like huskies and shit like this. Yeah. This is like one of her first barks. Wait. She's so
is that like
she's
a only 7 black months German old. Shepherd and yeah. like an Akita?
No, she's just a black German Shepherd.
Wow.
This is her when she's a puppy. She's still like really little.
How old is she?
Like, she's 7 months old. This is her demon shot.
Don't get involved with a dog and their bones.
That's kind of a spooky one. She's just so cute and so cool. Her name is Rebel, and I love her. And, you know, Anna Delvey left me, then Ava left, and then Anna left. So now I'm giving this is little Rebel. She's only 7 months old.
Oh, she's going to be a big dog.
Yeah, she's going to be like probably 75, 80. But look how pretty she is.
The wine has run out, and
I
feel
like...
I
don't think it has. Like, we have wine around the corner.
Well,
we can't.
It's metaphorically
okay,
run out.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Wait, Chris, I think, what else do you want to talk about? Is there anything else?
No, the only other thing I was going to ask you is a stupid fuck, marry, kill, America's Next Top Model, The Hills, or Kell on Earth.
Fuck? Meaning I want to fuck you?
Yeah, like you want to fuck it. Not like fuck off.
I mean, fuck The Hills.
Yeah.
The Hills is fuckable.
Yeah, it really is.
And what does that leave?
Marry and kill.
Marry, like, I want to be legally bound to you in the name of love?
Yeah.
Kill on Earth?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's left?
Kill Top Model.
No, I don't want to kill Top Model. I want to be a polygamist. I really love Tyra.
Top Model and The Hills. Or would you marry the Top Model?
I mean, I love Ken and Tyra. And that's like a whole other thing. Like, she got done dirty on that fucking documentary. And I'll tell you that right now.
Did she?
Yeah, she got really done dirty on that. Could she have worn a better silhouette? Yes. Could she? But there were a lot of tricks that the people that made that show pulled on her.
Really?
Yes, including a lot of the accusations that were made. That it's a whole thing. But I always stand behind the truth. She got done dirty on that. She really did. I know Tyra since she's 16, but we were never buddy-buddy. But I was on that show from 18 to 22, and it ran like a fucking slick ship. I didn't see anything crazy. They asked me to be on that documentary a million times. I was like, no fucking way. Because I already knew. I'm the publicist.
It was like a gotcha thing.
I was the publicist. I already knew. Like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, going on this thing for free because I'm trying to sell a book like J. Manuel? Like, please, dude. You were a fucking makeup artist at a Mac counter in fucking Toronto. She smiled on you, waved her wand. And then how do you repay her? You write a fictionalized book where you make yourself look like Karl Lagerfeld. Do you know that?
He wrote a whole book?
You never saw this during COVID when he probably was broke. I say that allegedly. Yeah, look. This is supposed to be a fictionalized book where he makes himself...
Literal Karl Lagerfeld.
Karl Lagerfeld. It's like, dude,
the bitch
you were
in the
a
meltdown?
Fucking makeup... You worked at a Mac counter in fucking thing. And who's that? Right? Come on. This is a fictionalized book. And what? It's COVID. You think these
people... Is it technically
people,
fiction?
I mean, whatever. The
or
devil,
was it like a memoir or no?
And it says the devil also wears cheap shoes. Like, he's going to, like, try to slag Tyra's shoe things. Do you think Tyra gives a fuck? I hope she does wear cheap
shoes.
She's
fucking wheeling and dealing melted ice cream
for
in Australia.
Her and more money. Like, I just think that whole thing was disgusting. Like, that chick fucking fed you, took care of you, raised you. And this is how you say thank you? Fuck off. And then you're on the documentary like, I just realized around season 8... that we were so horrible to people, and I wanted to quit. Like, no, you didn't. Like, we know what the receipts are. It will come out, okay? Because everyone knows what the receipts are. He never tried to quit that show, okay? Well, and then when COVID happened, you know, and they got fired, like, after Top Model, how did he repay her? He went and wrote a fucking book like this, thinking that was going to be his, like, I don't know, like, Flowers of the Attic, like, multi-million dollar sales. Like, nobody knows who you are. Nobody cares about you. The only time that people speak about you is when you talk about Top Model. You haven't been on that show in 15 years.
Well,
you haven't been on the show.
He stayed after season 8, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And he begged to stay on. And when they fired him, he got so ass-chafed about it that he wrote that book. And then when they called me to do the documentary, I was like, no, I'm not doing it. I have nothing bad to say about them. Okay? And who's the first person? Like, oh, I'll be there. I'm going to get some face filler and fucking come here and talk shit about the person who supported me. No, I'm serious. You can use this clip.
No.
People need to understand. That's gross. No. I'm not saying anything other than when I was on the show, that was my experience.
Totally.
When I was on Bravo, I said I didn't have a good time. I was very honest about that.
You'd be the first
and
person.
And when I was on MTV, I said it was great, which is why it was such a harsh joke for me when I was on Bravo. But... when they asked me to do that documentary, I was like, I'm not going on this. Like, what's in it for me?
Well, it's like
$5,000-$10,000.
But also, it's like, I imagine you could look at earlier seasons that you weren't involved with and say, okay, yeah, they're doing blackface, and be like, that was wrong. But
yes,
your experience, you didn't have.
I was not on the show then. And I'm not saying this didn't happen to me. Like, on my show, I had Louise, who said, that was my first week, I think, of the show, and it was Britain versus America.
Was that the British invasion?
I think that was my first season.
I think that's the first season I ever watched.
Okay, so that was my first season, and there's this girl named Louise. This is a very popular story. And I'm on set, and I think this girl's out of control. Like, she's running like, oh my God, oh my God. And I was just like, hey, you shouldn't run on set. It just made you like a chicken with your head cut off. Like, stop it. It causes energy. Like, set behavior is this. Hello, nice to see you. Very calm. The music's playing. There's catering.
Unless you're running the shoot.
And especially if you're running the shoot, it should be calm.
But like what I'm saying is like if you're running the shoot, then you have at least a reason to be like, okay.
No, in my opinion, if you're the producer, even if like all shit is happening like 360, you need to be calm. Because it's like being a surfer and be like, there's a wave. It's like, yeah, dude, you're a fucking surfer. You're in a fucking pipeline right now. Like, why are you like, whoa, it's a wave? Like, and so one of the best things that you can do is train people early on is like when this energy hits, which it does, that you don't get swept away by it. So my first day on Top Model, I'm sitting in the seat. I don't know what to do. I come out. I know Nigel from before. I go, what's going on? I don't even know. Like, how does this show work?
Your first day is like, what, a shoot?
It was a panel.
Oh, okay.
We started like, meet the judges. And I'm like, what do I do? And he's like, oh, Tyra's going to come out. She gets her hair and makeup done. You're going to sit here. That's your camera. You're going to nod and go like this. And that was like my first time on the show. Then you have to go off and shoot like a field thing. So I'm on a photo shoot with this girl. She's acting crazy. I tell her, stop running around and like give a shot. Like you look dead. Like, come on, like model.
Yeah.
And then.
Which is fair for a modeling show.
Right. So we go out on the panel. Now we're reviewing the photos. And her photo comes up and I don't know. Tyra says this. And I said, I don't know. I think it was horrible. She's like, Kelly Catrone. Kelly Catrone is like, basically, it's like my first week on the judging panel. She basically has like a fucking breakdown. And Tyra goes, you shouldn't speak to her like this because she is a PR maven or whatever she called me. And she's a producer and you're the model and you need to understand the hierarchy of a shoot. She has like a nervous breakdown, throws some shit down and she leaves and she goes out into the parking lot. And I'm like thinking,
the model?
Yeah, Louise. And then I'm thinking, what the fuck's going on here? And then the cameras all follow her out. Of course, it's a reality show. And she goes, if I ever see fucking Kelly Catrone, I'm going to punch that fucking bitch in the fucking face. And I'm like, okay, I've been physically threatened. I'm like, it's my first week here. Like, what the fuck
You're
is
like,
going on?
You're like, I survived
on?
Bravo, babe.
And
You're not going to shake
and
me.
And then people were like, Kelly Catrone is a bully. It's like, telling a model, here's like a little shout out to the Gen Z kids. Telling a model not to run on a set is not bullying. It is called professional advice.
I think it's very impressive that you're so able to know exactly who you are and how you feel and you don't budge.
I mean, it just takes a long time. Like, you know, like what does the Bible say? To thine own self be true or something like that. Like you have to, how can you be true to yourself if you don't know yourself, you know?
Yeah.
It takes a long time. Life is a long journey.
Oh, honey.
Do you know what I learned about the Sheep projects, of which I've had two, and I am the publicist for the Sheep, as yeah. I've said. If you follow the flock, you only see assholes. That's the Sheep teaching. Brilliant.
That is brilliant.
That's what I learned doing those two Sheep projects last year, the Rainbow One.
You follow the Sheep, you only see assholes.
If you follow the flock, you only see assholes all day.
I think that's a wonderful way to end.
I mean, let's do it.
Thank you so much for doing this. Like,
thanks for
I
having me.
Am just forever honored.
I took you on a magical mystery tour.
You did.
I'm
magical
sorry.
And mysterious. So
I know. I'm sorry.
But I love about this show is that, like, I have one thing going in and I come out with a totally different one that feels just as exciting.
Thank you, CK, for having me.
Thank you, KC, for...
But this is just the beginning now that we've had this level of intimacy. You can't just be like, oh, thanks for coming to East Williamsburg.
Girl! She is going to drug me. Before we started recording, she was like, what is this neighborhood called? And I was like, East Williamsburg, because that's... When I got the studio, that's what they called it. And she looks up.
I've never been
here. And she goes, is East Williamsburg a kind way of saying Bushwick? And let me tell you, she ripped the wig off my scalp.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I just, I never really got Brooklyn. I mean, I used to come here when I was young, but when, you know, to get drugs at like 2 a.m. in like 1989. Listen, I came into a city. It was a big city. It was New York City.
How big?
It was 1987. It was bigger than big. It was so big you couldn't even fit it inside of yourself.
Ooh.
You were like, there's no way I could take this city in.
Ow.
Ouch. And no, but you have to give it back to the next generation.
And
like,
I think...
Like, that's the thing. You have to be like, okay, children, come on, let's go. Like... We're leaving this for you kids. Like, let's take it farther
and
further.
I just want you to know that I'm very, like, it means a lot to me.
But you're super talented. I wouldn't be
Thank
here
you.
If you weren't, like, you didn't have something
And I believe
to
you. I know you
world.
Wouldn't lie to my face.
Like, why would I come? Like, you're great. Like,
I know. And I just want
I'm
you to know that, like,
the,
you're, like, one of those things that, like, when I'm feeling doubt, I ground myself.
Well, just call me. I'm like old enough to be your mom. So just
I
call
know,
me and I'll be like, Chris.
Sometimes I just feel like a broken record though of like, why I'm so sad. Why I feel like shit. Why I feel washed up.
Well, wait, that's like normal. This is a very wavy world. Like you're in the entertainment
it's
business.
Awful.
Oh, like, it's the worst.
Like this is all
but
I ever
what
wanted
the
to
outcome,
do.
But what the outcome is, what you end up getting to is you don't like princess. I don't give two fucks. Or queen, I don't give two fucks. Or king, I don't give two fucks. Like, I don't give two fucks. Like, everything has already been said to me or about me, positive and negative.
And
they're both as dangerous. The, oh my God, you're amazing. Oh my God, you look great. Oh my God, we love you. That's just as dangerous as, like, you fucking stupid ass.
Could not agree more because
fixed, whatever
when you give comment, like for me, like if I see comments of like, you're so funny or whatever, I'm like, yes, but I'm giving that the same amount of weight of my self-worth that I'm giving negative comments.
The point is that you get to give it to yourself at a certain point. Yeah, and I don't think I'm there yet. Like, I have a lot of self-loathing, but I also have a lot of celebration, and I'm very grateful. Like, you have to like kind of pick it up, like little beads of a pearl necklace.
And like, I feel myself doing that now, where it's like, I really do feel like everybody said anything they could have, and I just don't care. Like, I understand the briefness of life, and like, I'm just like, I want to be present. I want to be with my family and the people who lift me up. And
are doing that.
Exactly. And
I am with my family.
But I just mean more so like, I feel like I'm starting to find my path again.
We need to figure this out. I'm coming back for another episode. It's Kelly Catrone. I just want to say thank you so much, Chris Clemens.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love you
a lot. This is a real lighter.
That is a real lighter.
With
fake cigarettes.
We're not going to light it now because you need to save it for the next guest. I also would like to have planters, or we need a nut sponsor.
I will get real nuts for you the next time you're here.
I don't care. I don't need to eat, even though I do now.
I was going to say.
Can we get a sponsor for these people? BC 5000. Hello. We're not going to do this. We're going to be in Bushwick for the rest of our East Williamsburg. We're going to be in East Williamsburg for the rest of our life.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Get tickets to the tour.
When's your tour?
Oh, my God, this fall. We have Pittsburgh, Philly, Boston, Chicago, Indianapolis, St. Louis, Seattle, Portland, L.A.,
I'm going to come to one
Atlanta.
Of your shows.
Oh, my God, do it. Just don't tell me which one, because I'll be scared.
Can I get tickets for free?
I got you, girl.
I mean, I'll buy tickets, actually.
No, I got you.
But we need to get people to go out. We need to get the social media going. We can't just ask people on a podcast, like, hey, remember this. Like, this is where we should put the dates up right
now.
Well,
that's what the editor will do.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Like, right now.
Right now.
Right now, put the dates up. And then this is the vocal that I want over the dates. You don't see my face. It's like, bloop, 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 bloop. Pull up, pull up, pull up, pull up.
Just farted
pull
from
up,
laughing.
Pull up. Emergency, Chris Clemens is on tour. Support local businesses. Support your local comedians. This is Kelly Catrone. Chris Clemens is on tour. Bloop, bloop, bloop,
the
bloop.
Way I'm going to drive through woo, New York City woo, with woo. This on a loop.
This is it. This is our record. Chris Clemens is on tour. This is Kelly Catrone. I give good phone. Chris Clemens is on tour.
I give good
for
phone.
For sure. Check the dates. Don't be late. We need to fucking pre-sell tickets, bitches. This is it. Give him your vote of confidence by buying a ticket and laugh your ass off in a world that only wants to cry. Please try. Chris Clemens is on tour. Thank you.
And with that, I mean...
We do the pull-up.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
Bloop, 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 bloop.